on the Q&A session. I'm going to extend a lot on what that talk was about and kind of dig into one phenomenon that we've seen. So I'm going to go into this phenomenon called polluter services. And probably a lot of this community isn't exactly sure what a polluter service is, so I'm going to tell you what a polluter service is. And kind of in a nutshell, what they are is you can use your allowance to try and beat up people. Originally, these were used mostly by gamers, not to shut off the residential police, but as the attacks and scripts have gotten better and better, they've scaled to the point where they can probably take down most medium-sized websites. And as fortune would have it, backends to these things leak all the time. There's a very rich source of data from one that's called TW Booter, and that's going to be kind of the basis that I try and do my analysis of these things. So let me just quickly give you the rundown on what a booter is. First, they're very easy to find. You can just type into Google, you can Google booter, and then they go by this kind of thin veneer. They call themselves stress testers. It's how they try and legitimize themselves. So as you can see, you could choose from many, many booter services. There's pages and pages of these results on Google. And if you want to use Google, you can go straight to the source, hack forums, and you'll see them. There's an entire subsection of hack forums devoted to these booter services. And they tell you their different features. A lot of them key on uptime. They'll say 99% uptime, 100% uptime. They key on things like this. They can key on customer service. They compete on how many attacks, how much capacity they have to offer. Some of these are claiming, right, 65 gigabits a second that they can sustain on these things. So we're looking at some pretty decent DDoS machines at this point. And if you see one of these that you like, you can just go to their website. Here's one of them here, and they just offer their features. So they're getting more and more features these days. They have this one called Skype. What this is there's a privacy hole in Skype, where you can find anyone's IP address. If they're logged into Skype, and you have their username. So they integrate this into the service so that you can, instead of using an IP address, domain name, you can just use the Skype ID. And it'll automatically refresh every 5 seconds to follow them around in case they try and hide from you. That's an IP address. There's another one for Steam. This is a gaming platform. Again, it meets your IP information. So they've integrated this in so that you just have some Steam ID. And you can DOS based on that. There's another one for Cloudflare, where it tries to burn through Cloudflare and find the actual IP address of the service so that they can just bypass Cloudflare altogether and attack the service directly. So they're integrating more and more services like this. They say, right, normally how these services are sold is that they allow you to perform some kind of limited DDoS. In this case, it's 1 hour is their maximum limit. So take a guess, how much would you pay for a service like this?
$5.
What?
$5?
$5? I mean, you're in the ballpark here. You're more in the ballpark than what some people think. So here's kind of what they normally price these services at. Is here, right? You have, for a month, you can get about $20 to get you an hour of DDoS. If you wanted to do two concurrent attacks on this service, $28. They have this lifetime membership. Take that with a grain of salt. All the services that offer a lifetime membership just kind of normally go under at some point. So lifetime might be anywhere from 6 months to a year that they might survive before they have too many customers. They need to close business and reopen underneath. They all always reopen underneath.
What's the policy? I mean, you can do an hour for a 6 month plan. Often can you?
It's pretty much buffet style, so as long as you're willing to re-up the attack every hour, you can continue to use their service. There's no limit, right? They have one concurrent attack, two concurrent attacks. And as long as you're willing to re-up it for an hour, it might be like by Verizon, where unlimited might not really mean unlimited.
Is that like 1 hour per day for an entire month?
No, this is 1 hour, and you can re-up it. After that hour, you can initiate a new attack.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah. You get a lot of bang for your buck. So, if you decide on what it is you want to show out your money, then you get this kind of nice, easy-to-use interface. You can just plug in the Skype ID, the host name. You can drop down that you can cloud player, you know, use your HTTP get and post attacks. If you're doing a non-cloud player service, by best with like one of your UDP style attacks. So some of them even handhold their users even more. So these are the kinds of nice user interfaces that you'll get out of these tools. And so how does it kind of look from the booter services? What does it take to start up these booter services? Is an interesting question. So the first thing you're probably going to need, you're going to need those nice little scripts, right? Off the internet. So you might have to pay some of your code up some scripts for you. But the nice thing is that these days, there's a lot of source code floating around on the internet. So a silent booter was kind of one of the original kind of large-scale full-featured booters, and their source code is just floating around the web. So in fact, this source code is the basis for a lot of the other booters' source code. Okay, so you easily solve this web code problem. Next thing you have to do is you have to grab some attack infrastructure, right? You actually need to build some attack infrastructure. You can either go to the root of, you know, reproducing some bots, maybe paying for some bot install, or if that's just too much of a hassle, you know, bots are like, they go up and down the hassle. You can just rent some infrastructure. And so it's kind of a mix we find between booter services, whether they compromise things to do their attacks, or whether they rent services from ISPs that are willing to tolerate these kinds of bad behavior. So the next point is you need some way to collect money. Most of these services accept PayPal payments. Some of them are beginning to accept Bitcoin payments. And before Liberty Reserve was taken down, Liberty Reserve was their choice for these things, but obviously that's no longer an option for them. So now that you can collect some money, so next you need to attract some customers. So you can advertise on things like Hack Forum, like I showed you the entire forum that's dedicated to these things. You can also go to gamer sites and say, hey, I'm opening up a booter service. Please join it. And then the final step in this, of course, is you profit. So that's kind of the introduction to these booter services. The next part of the study is going to be based on this leak data set from this one booter service. So this leak happened in late March, I believe it was. It was from the TW Booter 2. It had the nickname 2 in it because it had to relaunch at some point, but the domain name was taken away. And then it relaunched as TW Booter 2. And at the time that they were taken down, they were in operation for about 2 months, I would say. And they had already attracted about 300 users to their service. They had racked up over 10,000 victims, unique victims. And their users had carried out almost 50,000 attacks at this point. And this was a very nice, fine-grained data source.
If a user does an hour and then re-ups, is that one attack period?
That's kind of stupid. That's why you see the large number of attacks. So we're going to break down what that number actually means in a little bit. Because the nice thing is, this data set is very rich. You see a lot of these weak data sets from these booter services, but most of them aren't that rich. So this one had a nice properties to it. It contained the IP and domain name for a target, it contained the type, it contained the duration, and it contained the client that initiated it. Most booter services, it turns out, don't keep as good records as booter services. So this was a nice boost to us in our research. And it, in fact, provides a lot of nice insights into their infrastructure, how their client behaves, and who their victims are, and how they're victims. So kind of how this data set came into being is that TW Booter 2 was used to DDoS a blogger named Brian Krebs. I would warn you not to mess with Brian Krebs because in the end you're probably going to pay dearly for it. So in this case, he exposed this booter service, he exposed this leaked data set from them, and he also hunted down the particular client that was responsible for DDoSing site. So this client went by the name of Phobia. A little bit of background. Brian Krebs traced him down to a teenager that was still living with his parents. I believe he was like 19 or so. And he was part of this kind of, I would call it strictly like strip kiddie kind of club that was hacking into people's Xbox accounts and kind of posting YouTube videos of how weak they were. And they were posting videos of booting people. So Brian Krebs managed to hunt this person down and so that the inner workings of the food service.
Was this the same deal that had the gum swatted?
Yes, I believe that he was also probably responsible for that. So, yes, you don't mess with Ryan or else you're going to have your details of those numbers. And this website was also tied to some attacks against some other reporters from RS Technet. And Ross Cooney was some other somewhat high-profile attackers. So I did a little bit of digging into this booter service, and there's two people mostly behind this particular booter service. One of them goes by the name of Aska. He's the one that fronts the money for the service. And then there's this other guy, the lead, that's the developer of the service. And as I said, they had this nice little friendly message where they relaunched this thing. And both of them are definitely not US leads. So this service was supposed to be kind of one of the cutting edge services. It integrated the Skype Cloud thing. It had it tried to integrate more than advanced DDoS services into their platform and service. Okay, so let's do a quick rundown of what we found when we dug into this database. The first thing that we found is their attack structure. In total, they had 15 servers. When they started their service, they had 3 servers. By the end of this thing, there were 9 active servers. All the active servers were hosted at an ISP in the Netherlands. There were, at one time, 3 US-based servers. However, these look like they were short-lived. They, I think, lasted between 3 and 6 days. So probably takedowns, on these servers. However, the Netherlands ones were fairly stable, lasting among all of them. Some things that we noticed in this package structure, it offers some pretty clever SIM flooding. It offers the DNS amplification attacks that we were just talking about. Those are implemented in this code. It offers some clever HTTP-based ones that look very much like a router, enough like a router to get around things like Cloudflare and things like that. And they had another one, Rudy, but essentially these top ones made up about, I think, 95% of the attack type. The next thing that we can look at is we actually subscribe to this service to try and figure out what the capabilities were. They telling the truth about how much attack traffic they were capable of. And so here's what we found when we subscribed to the service. First, we did the SIM flooding. That's not really meant to run your bandwidth. It's more meant to just, at this point, I think the most devastating attack on a SIM flood is actually the network interrupts that generates off your network card. If you don't have a smart enough network card to deal with this on board, it's probably the most devastating attack for SIM flood today. And the interesting one was the DNS amplified UDP attack. So that one, it kicked up about the same number of packets, obviously much, much larger packets being amplified. And that one actually picked up over 800 megabits a second of the traffic.
So are those self-reported numbers, or did you attack something?
Well, we attacked our own service.
What would that make you guys use that obviously?
We warned them beforehand, so they knew it was coming. So we have a kind of swampy part of the GMU network to do these kinds of studies on. So we attacked the swamp. And the other thing is we tried the layer 7 HTTP attacks. And it was somewhat interesting. We found they were actually using proxies. So for the same one, they were obviously just spoofing their attacks, the IP Netherlands. So I would just spoof whatever they wanted in the IP address. DNS one, obviously, hide behind the reflection part. For the HTTP ones, you need to actually establish a connection. So for this one, they need some proxies. We attacked ourselves for 5 minutes. We saw over 26,000 proxies that they had access to. These didn't look like uniform proxies. They kind of looked like a Frankenstein kind of proxy network. And in fact, some of these proxies forwarded the original headers so that we could see the servers in the Netherlands that were actually attacking. So this was kind of like a podge of proxies. I don't know exactly how they filled this. It probably wasn't a bot network. It's probably just like, you know, them scraping open proxy lists would be my guess. Because none of the proxies really look uniform in any way. So this shows you that, in fact, they're telling the truth. They can, in fact, pick up a pretty sizable amount of network EMS amplification effects. So the next thing we wanted to look at was kind of the growth rate of these services to see, right, how many customers are they there. So at the beginning, there's this large spurting growth. It might be because they existed in the service before, so these might be users of the old service, just transferring over to their new service. And then once that levels off, you see about 3 users are adding pretty consistently per day onto the growth. And most of the people from month to month resubscribe. So they kept their customers happy. Next, we tried to dig into what these users exactly look like. And we definitely found that there were typically 3 categories of users. There were the gamer users. These were the ones who just subscribed for the very short attacks. When you do these things, there's tiered prices. So you can subscribe, as I showed you. So in the case of TW Booter, it was between, I think, 1 minute and 2 hours where your subscription offers. So normally the gamers opted for 10 minutes or less of continuous DDoS time. The people that were more interested in attacking websites obviously went for the longer time period. And we found these privileged users that appeared to have unlimited ability on the system. These weren't the developers. They might have been the buddies of the developers. We're not sure who these people were, but they could execute far more attacks than the normal user. And we tried to compute the earnings of the service, and we found that TW Booter was making about $7,000, somewhere around there, assuming that most of the people actually paid for the service in subscriptions a month. So if you're supporting about 9 servers, this is probably a sustainable business. And TW Booter doesn't offer lifetime service. They were actually trying to go for a sustainable business model. So we dug into a little bit more on these 3 categories of users, and this is where we find that, right, even though it's 50,000 attacks, a lot of these attacks, the majority of their attackers are gamers, and they're launched on attacks, but they're really short attacks. And they're mostly launched at residential networks. The other thing is we pick out the website users. The interesting thing is that if you look across all 3 of these, they kind of, right, they have the same number of targets a day. They kind of launch the same number of attacks. It's just the duration of those attacks that seems to change based on the class of users. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe that's the attention span that people have. Is that they can click on the button 13 times a day and then they're bored. So that's what we found, and then clearly, privileged users were causing a lot of havoc with the service. Since they could just start attacks, they continue to run until they stop them. So these privileged users, by far, kicked up a lot of traffic. And in fact, we found 6 users were responsible for about half of the attack hours of the service. I think 2 of these users were privileged users, and 4 of these users just like clicking on the button a lot and attacking people's websites. Next, we kind of dug into the victim side of things. So we dug into it. We found out about 10,000 of them looked like they were unique victims of the service. We identified about 700 websites. We did this right just by sweeping through the IP address and trying to connect to port 80. And these were the ones that answered. In fact, right, most of them were residential links. However, there were a decent number of websites. We kind of inspected a lot of websites, and a lot of websites, it was still overlapped with gamer sites. So it was like gaming servers, gaming forums, and then we also found, kind of ironically, other Booter services was their next popular service. So it kind of ran down there. And then from there, there was kind of this long tail of things. You could pick out some of the bloggers and blogging sites that they attacked. We did pick out 3 government sites. We picked out 2 users. We actually suspected that this was 1 user that subscribes for 2 subscriptions because of the limits placed on him. This user attacked 3 government sites for a total of, right, a few days. 2 of them were Indian government sites, and the 3rd one was the LA Police Department's website. So I guess he had a bone to pick with the Indian government and the LAPD. So, right, this isn't the only Booter service that I show you. This isn't the only Booter service they have their data leak. It just happened that this Booter service kept a lot better route than most of the other Booter services. So we picked on it. We also had leak dumps from the asylum cleaner service, which is much older, much more established in this market. They didn't keep fine grade records of their cash flow. So all of them leak from it. That they had over 5,000 subscribers. They launched over 500,000 hacks over 16 months. And like I said, if you search PageSpin, you can find more and more of these things. Some of them showed evidence of using compromised servers as a backend. Some of them looked like they rented servers. Most of them, you know, maybe the large ones had like 100 or 200 users. And it looks like there's kind of a vigilante group that sprung up that like hacking into these Twitter services and kind of disabling their Twitter services. So one of the popular ones is the Twitter down that kind of picks on these guys. And it's probably a large source of the leak data sets. Anything like that. They're kind of trying to police the market and not have much of that on this. So kind of the takeaway from this is right is that these booter services with your allowance money, you can rent this fairly powerful infrastructure. You can make heavy use of it. This infrastructure is very capable of taking down medium-sized websites. They're actively developing these scripts. They're refining how good these attacks work. They're integrating all these other services to help you use them easier, hunt people down, burn through their protection as much as possible. Right, integrated services. Then they're also on large use of the DNS amplification. This is definitely kind of the killer DDoS what you see of things. And like I said, this service, you know, it's not making a whole lot of money, but it looks like they can probably sustain themselves. This is, so that's kind of the wrap up on these services. So questions? I should probably thank Brian for leaking the data on the internet and Muhammad for doing all of the grungy work with the MySQL. Huh?
Can you show for the application of that, can you show that has a 90%
Yeah, about that, yeah.
How much do they add up their time? So I'm just trying to figure out if it wants to advertise their time.
I think it's actually about what they advertise. If you go up to the three concurrent model, then you could bomb these three together, and you could get about their advertiser rate. So they were advertising about 3 gigabits a second. So.
Do you think the ones who advertise much higher, right? Like, I think you should apply them.
Right, like 65 gigabits.
Do you think they can do something?
Judging by the feedback, some of these can, in fact, kick up that much traffic. If you look at that forum, they have, you know, hundreds of replies to it. So obviously there's some much larger scale booter services than CW booter out there. And CW booter wasn't even on that list. They didn't pay for advertising on NASA forum, so probably only the bigger ones pay for advertising.
So I wonder what this lower margin is. Do you see as much innovation as what Jason was talking about in the previous talk? I mean, I know that there's some copies of course that you look like student customizing. How much of that they do? How much of a sense do you get from watching that?
They're largely just following on the coattails of other people. And right, what's new now gets commoditized into lower end things. So that's what's happening is people on the higher end are innovating and pushing the boundaries. And then they're just mirroring that and slowly bringing that over to source code. And some of it's effectively like open source when the source code is leaked out over time. So there's a lot of people copying an original code base, making it a little bit better, and kind of iterating that.
So what is the most common payment method?
It appears that PayPal is probably the relatively common payment method. That's the default. You go to most of the sites, it's the default to PayPal, and then you can drop it down in Bitcoin. Probably the only other one in Web Money might be the other one.
And they also advertised sexy tech support or customer support. Were you able to verify that? Would that be the
thing? No, in fact, they do offer customer support. Some of them have phone numbers. I called the government. You can get customer support. Because they offer free subscriptions, and with the free subscription, they don't offer the layer 7 attacks. So I asked why I can see the layer 7 attacks, and they said, oh, you have to subscribe to see the layer 7.
Just to hear a little bit of culture.
What?
Just because you're a business doesn't mean your customers don't. I mean, you don't.
This is true on the other side, right? The ones that offer the lifetime support, they go out of business at some point.
So I'm wondering, I mean, they're hosting the services, right? You know, a lot of the traffic and the application tax product. So a lot of that traffic is sourced in these, what you said, seven boxes and one ISP someplace. So I wonder why. Is this why they're cycling so quickly? Is because they're getting taken down?
And like I said, some of these were used for the entire, so there were three of these that were used for the entire 9 months. And the other six that they added on to another one stayed up for a month. So I don't think that's their problem. It seems like they can find ISPs that are friendly with hosting DDoS. And other people have reported on these same findings that you can pierce through right through proxies. So other people have pierced through these proxies and posted the name of this Netherlands IP. So this is, I guess, another issue.
Any other questions? All right, let's go ahead and make the speaker.